Hey everyone, this is Big O, Rock Lines Magazine, and today we are talking with Andrew Hagar of Andrew Hagar and the Midnight Suns. If the name sounds familiar, you're correct. It's Sammy's son, Andrew, but he is going out on his own, and he's got his own band. And how are you doing today, Andrew?
Doing fantastic. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. I'm doing wonderful, actually. Thanks for giving me a call. I appreciate it.
Of course.
I'll jump right into it. Your new EP or album, or is it called Limited Edition Psycho? Is that correct?
Yeah. New EP is coming out later this month, late June.
And you've already released a few of songs off of that album. One that I really enjoyed. Well, actually, I enjoyed all of them, but Red Light Appetite. What was the story behind that song?
Red Light Appetite, I wrote with my co-writer and producer, one of my best friends, Trev Lukather, back in, I believe, early 2021. And he had an idea. He was like, hey, we need to write a song called Red Light Appetite. And he had like a guitar riff and some stuff. He had the idea for the name of the song, but had no lyrical content or any idea what it was going to be about. So I was like, oh, okay, cool. I like that. And then, I kind of like had an idea for vampires. So writing the song, I already had a visual idea for what a music video could potentially be. And turned the song into kind of a discussion of like the fine line between love and obsession and addiction and being stuck in a toxic relationship when you don't even realize, kind of what you're involving yourself in. And it just kind of spiraled out from there. And I think we put together a really cool production with some, incredible bombastic guitars, and just a really, really fun song,
As much fun as the song is, the video is great too. And you got the vampire theme in there, and what was that like doing that production?
That was really cool. Originally, I was going to work with a different director, and things didn't work out, and I was left kind of with a deadline and not a lot of time to execute. So I was talking to one of my good buddies, who's a fantastic photographer out there in Austin, Texas, and he knew a guy named Tyler who does fantastic work with music videos. And he put me in touch with Tyler, and we basically put together an idea and executed it, inside, God, I want to say like 10, 12 days. And it was an incredible experience. I flew out to Austin, got my friend Lexi out there. Tyler brought in Tori, the lead vampire. And we just shot a fun little music video. I had a bunch of random extras, had some a Mexican biker gang that was in the video. Like, it was just a really cool experience. Shot it on a full moon. I mean, it was just very serendipitous the way that everything came together,
Well, it's very visually very effective, and very easy to watch. I think I've watched that thing, I don't know, about maybe 6-7 times. I like the song, but I also like the video. I see something different every time I watch it.
Yeah, there's a lot of great little details in there, Yeah, we were very fortunate to, like I said, have it all come together, and everybody that was there was really enthusiastic about it. I kind of, I grew up watching a lot of B-horror movies and stuff. I'm a huge fan of From Dusk Till Dawn, and I kind of wanted to emulate that visual style in the music video, and I think we did a pretty decent job.
I think you did a great job, because that's exactly what it reminded me of.
Thank you.
Your latest, Systematic Minds, what was the motivation behind that song?
That's actually the first song that I worked on with Trez. We had been friends for a really long time, and during the pandemic, he started doing more production work. He'd always been a songwriter that worked with big bands. He worked with, Hailstrom and a bunch of other really big artists. But when he started doing production, I was in the midst of what is now a failed label deal. And I had a bunch of songs on deck that I really loved, and Trev really liked as well. And one day he was just cutting some stuff in the studio and had a little idea, put together kind of a rough demo and sent it to me and said, hey, man, I got this idea for you. What do you think about it? And I'm like, that sounds great. Like, I'm going to drive down from the Bay Area to L.A. And I did that and thought up some lyrical and melodic stuff and got in the studio with him for the next couple of days. And we cut what would become Systematic Minds. That was December 2020. So we've been sitting on a lot of this music for a while, for the better part of, nearly 3 years now. So, but it's lyrically, kind of about the idea that your ideas and your thoughts these days are increasingly not your own. Everybody in America wants to believe in this idea of rugged individualism, that they have a unique perspective all their own. But like I said, these days, everybody's being funneled down certain paths of thought, whether they're looking at social media or the news. Everybody has kind of like an AI-curated perspective where they're being fed the same memes, the same talking heads are giving them news bites. More people's ideas are becoming socialized, not like socialism, but in the idea that someone else has supplanted the idea that they have. And, we're locked into this kind of systemic ideology. And that's kind of what I'm writing about in the song. Like, where are we headed as a society? And if we ever stop to ask ourselves if it's the right place to go, you know?
Now, musically, you got a late start because you were into martial arts, mixed martial arts, when you was a youth. I think I read somewhere where you were motivated by the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Is that correct? And how did that come about?
When I was a kid, I was watching a lot of cartoons, He-Man, Ghostbusters, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and a lot of Bruce Lee movies. And I just, I wanted to be a martial artist. I wanted to be a Ninja Turtle. So I begged and begged my parents, and they put me into karate when I was 5, and just kind of snowballed from there. When I was 15, I started training submission grappling and Muay Thai. I did a little bit of boxing and a variety of other traditional martial arts. And, around the same time, I had been really delving into the nascent world of mixed martial arts, which wasn't even really called that. I was renting UFC, videotapes from Blockbuster and watching Japanese pride fighting on, whatever means I could get a hold of, Japanese kickboxing tournaments, K1. I just made it my life goal to kind of, become a professional fighter. And I went down to L.A. for college when I was 18 years old, started training at one of the only MMA gyms at the time with some, incredible, prolific kind of fighters of the early days of mixed martial arts in the UFC. And, I had amateur fights when I was, 18, and then did that all the way into my 30s until I transitioned into music full time. But I spent about 10 years coaching athletes after a pretty severe knee injury sidelined me. I had a knee surgery for the first time at 25, and that was when I started coaching athletes full time. And I started working with amateur guys, professional guys, and in both Muay Thai and mixed martial arts. Started training actors to get ready for TV parts like Matthew Reese and The Americans, started working with celebrity clients and all sorts of stuff. And it was a really, really great career. I'm really, happy that I had that experience because it shaped so much of my ideology that I've now taken with me into music, my work ethic, all of this stuff. So.
And once you got into music, a lot of people don't know this, but probably wouldn't know this, but you got started with Kris Kristofferson, I believe, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and what was that experience like?
Oh, it was amazing. I mean, just as a human being, having the experience of being with someone like that day in and day out on the road, Kris is such an incredibly gifted individual. I mean, he's a Rhodes Scholar, he was a champion boxer, rugby player, football player, triple threat. He's a philosopher, a master of different kinds of philosophy. And, he's just such an inspiring human being and has so much wisdom from a life well lived. I think a little bit of that rubbed off on me that year I was touring with him in 2016. And, know, very blessed to have that opportunity. I don't think I was anywhere near ready to be on a tour of that magnitude with an artist like that, but I did my absolute best. Obviously, back then I was playing more acoustic kind of folk style music, and it very heavily influenced me as both a human being and a songwriter.
Well, being that your father was Sammy Hagar, you didn't have to look far for, I guess, an influence. But I know that when you were younger, you were your mom and dad is filled up, and you live with your mom.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like being Sammy Hagar's son? Did he, that, you know, did the last name had to have people ask questions, but they probably maybe didn't know.
Yeah, I mean, that was by choice as well. Like, I mean, I was, even when I was in college and stuff, I'd be going out, going to the supermarket and getting carded, and people would say, oh, Hagar, like Sammy? And I would tell them no. You know, some of my best friends in college that I knew, they knew me for 3 or 4 years and had no idea who my dad was. It just wasn't something that I was advertising. And obviously now, in the days of social media, it's hard to go anywhere and have people check that and not know, you know, who my dad is. But in my formative years, it wasn't really a big part of my life. You know, and I'm proud of my dad. I, you know, I'm very, like, again, grateful and blessed to have that kind of upbringing and experience. And he's an incredibly hard worker, and he did teach me a lot about, you know, kind of hard-nosed grinding mentality and the work ethic, you know. But yeah, in terms of, like, musical influence, he wasn't really a big influence on me at all. It was more about, like I said, the work ethic and the mentality and the philosophy behind it. Those things are kind of the bigger things that I took from him. I took more of my musical inspiration from my mother, because growing up with her, living out kind of in the country and stuff, she was a, you know, prolific kind of folk style songwriter, and would play a lot of really great old school alternative country, cowboy poetry, folk, you know, around the house. So I was exposed to some really great songwriters early, and that would be the thing that I kind of took inspiration from more than anything when I started out.
And as far as any other musical influences that you, I know, I think I read that, of course, you grew up during the grunge era type
yeah.
thing. Any other influences from that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, 90s alternative music was like a huge part of my upbringing. And I think, you know, you can hear that in the music that I'm making now. And that's always kind of been something that has stuck out to me. You know, bands like Soundgarden and Alice in Chains and Stone Temple Pilots were massive for me growing up. But I was a huge Nine Inch Nails fan, a massive fan of Radiohead since I was a kid, still one of my favorite bands. And I, you know, I spent a lot of time going to, you know, punk and hardcore shows, you know, in and around the East Bay Area, you know. So I spent a lot of time listening to, like, skate punk. That was also coming up around the same time that I was growing up. And they had, like, NoFX. I loved the Dead Kennedys and a lot of the earlier hardcore stuff out of the East Coast movement, you know, Gorilla Biscuits, Bad Brains, that kind of stuff. So, you know, I mean, I listened to a lot of stuff.
Well,
or so, I started listening to a lot of hip-hop. So it's like, I mean, I'm a fan of all music, pretty much.
Well, if you're going to be successful in the music business, I think you need to be versatile that way.
Because
you get a, you know, my playlist is wide, a wide variety, but, you know, you have to, you take the good from it and the bad from it and make it your own.
So, absolutely.
And, the fact that you're Sammy's, son, you are on, or basically there's a, the TV program, Family Legacies. You were on, I think you were on the first episode of that.
Yes, sir.
You and, Draven Bennington, Chester
mm-hmm.
Bennington's son. What was that experience like? It looked like he was having a lot of fun, doing that show.
Most definitely. We did about 7 hours of interview, The first hour was spent with my dad. We did it together. And then after he left, you know, we talked about a lot of really interesting personal stuff. You know, I like to talk about mental health and wellness, so we were talking about all that. Got to watch a lot of old footage of my father at, like, the VMAs, old music videos. They were having me, like, you know, roast his fashion sense and all this stuff, which, I mean, I thought he was a, you know, he had some interesting phases in his career, but I thought for the most part he was a pretty fashionable, stylish individual back then. That's just cool, kind of roast the 90s fashion. But yeah, no, it was really fun. I was very honored to be a part of it. I grew up watching a lot of MTV and a lot of music videos, and the fact that they licensed my song Red Light Appetite and the accompanying music video to show was really cool to me. I got a music video on MTV. I don't know many modern day artists that can say that, because MTV doesn't really show music videos much anymore. So it was really cool.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. MTV was a staple when your dad's a little older than I am, but he was definitely a big influence on my music. Can't Drive 55, I don't know, that's a staple in my playlist. So,
love that.
Yeah. During that, I watched that Family Legacy program, and there was a story on there that if you could elaborate on, where you got, someone pulled you over and you tried to pull the Sammy Hagar card. That it didn't work, I guess.
No, it did not. That's the first and the last time I've tried to pull that card.
can you delve into that story a little bit more?
Sure, yeah. I was coming home from Monterey back to school, college in Los Angeles, and it was a holiday weekend. I was coming back for a big test, and I was trying to make the class. It was an evening class. So I left early that morning, and it run into a bunch of, you know, post-holiday traffic. I was around Santa Clarita, and things had started to clear up on the road a little bit. So I put my cruise control on. I think I was going about 85 miles an hour, which was about the max that my cruise control would let me go. And I got pulled over by this cop, and he asked me if I knew how fast I was going. And, you know, I said, yeah, I mean, I think I was going about 85. And, you know, he looked at my license plate and, or excuse me, my license and my registration, and basically asked me if I was related to Sammy Hagar. And I was like, well, actually, yeah, I am, you know, because I thought, I really need to get out of this ticket and get on the road. I'm going to be late for my class. And, you know, my dad had always told me, like, hey, man, if you ever need to get out of a ticket, just tell him who you are. Like, most of these cops love me because I can't drive 55. And, you know, he's also a member of the 1199 Foundation, which is a, you know, foundation benefiting the California Highway Patrol and all this stuff. So he's a major, he was at the time a major donor. So that's why cops liked him, not because he made a song about speeding. And it turned out this guy had pulled over my dad something like 20 or 25 years prior around the same area. And I asked him if he had given my dad a ticket, and he was very vocal about, yes, he had in fact given my dad a ticket. And I was like, oh man. And not only did he write me up for a speeding ticket, he wrote me up for faster than I was going. He said I was going 102 miles per hour, which again, my cruise control would not let me go, I think, anywhere north of like 89 miles an hour. So I went to the Santa Clarita courthouse, you know, a few months later. I tried all the tricks, extending, you know, my court date, you know, and all this stuff to make it so the guy wouldn't show up. But the guy actually did show up, and he told the judge I was going 102, even though I said that, you know, I was not driving that fast. And the judge made an example of me. They revoked my license for 6 months, and it was brutal.
Brutal. Did you say, Dad, I need your help here. You want to pay this?
Yeah. Yeah, no. At the time, my father and I did not have a great relationship. I was on my own for that one, and I was stuck with a massive bill and an invalid license. So it was exceedingly challenging for the next 6 months as I tried to figure out a way to get around to all of my various jobs, because I had like 3 jobs in college too. So that really put a wrench in my plans. You know?
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Getting back to your new release or your new music, you work a lot with, you talk about mental health, issues.
Yes, sir.
With the, and that's actually a personal theme of mine this week. I actually, just before I talked to you, I talked to Tony West of Blacklist Union.
Yeah,
he's very much into the a lot of his music, or a lot of their band's music, is deals with mental issues, mental health issues. And I also on Saturday night went to Bike Week here in Ohio, and Quiet Riot was one of the headliners. So
mental health, man.
Yeah, absolutely, mental health. Are you involved with any organizations or anything at this time that you want to talk about, or?
Yeah, I mean, right now I don't have any partnerships, but I've worked with several different suicide prevention organizations, mental health awareness. I really, again, mental health has had such a huge impact on my career as a musician. I wouldn't be playing music if it weren't for a friend of mine who sadly took his own life. So, I've tried to be as outspoken as I can be about mental health, and at the very least just bring awareness to the idea that it's okay to talk about it. It's okay to get help. I have a lot of friends from, in and around the Midwest, Ohio, Michigan, from communities where it's not normalized to talk about your feelings. And I've, worked with some of those guys even to try to get them to start going to therapy. And it's been tremendously beneficial for a lot of them. And I'm very happy that in this era now, we're starting to lift the stigma that comes along with, men talking about their feelings, going to therapy, and just starting to make the conversation a little bit louder. That's really, really important to me.
Well, absolutely. And that's a great mentality to have because we need more of that. Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. We need the conversation to get louder and louder,
Yep, absolutely. As far as your music goes, what are your short-term goals, long-term goals? What do you have in the plans?
I mean, one of my biggest goals is just to get back out on the road and start touring this stuff. I've released a lot of different EPs. I think at this point I have more music that I haven't released than I have released. And I've been releasing music since 2016. Pretty regularly under different, monikers and project titles. But my biggest goal is just to get back out there, start touring Europe again. I really love the European music fans and how receptive they are, how much they really want to genuinely hear what you have to say as an artist. Obviously, there's still some really big markets over there for rock and roll. I would love to get back out there and play some more festivals, And I think now that I have, my band, my touring band, the Midnight Suns, we're more than ready to get out there and do that. Anybody that's seen some of the shows we played over the last, 6 months or so probably can attest to the fact that we are a really good live band, and I want to get out there and show it. So that's the biggest immediate goal for me, is just to get back in the game, get out there, start touring again. It's just a bit challenging. There's a lot more costs now than there were even back in 2017, 2018 when we were touring. Things are just very different and continuing to change at a pretty unprecedented pace in the music industry. So, we're talking to a couple different booking agents right now and trying to find the right thing for us. Touring support and a touring support budget is definitely something we're looking at right now because, as I said, there's a lot of financial challenges to getting out there and touring, especially when you're an independent band and you don't have a label or some type of private investor funneling money into your project. So
yeah, absolutely. It's not like when your dad was younger, where they say, here's millions, go tour and this and that.
Yep.
The music industry definitely has changed. Hopefully, if you do get out on tour, you're out our way here in Ohio, Michigan area. Love to see you out on the road. Love to come and check you out. In closing, is there anything you'd like to say to our listeners?
I genuinely appreciate anyone who's taking the time to, listen to the tunes, share them, leave a comment on my socials. You can hit me up on, Instagram or TikTok at Andrew Hagar Official, on Facebook as well. And I just genuinely appreciate anyone who takes the time to listen to the music and support. You know, that's without you guys, it wouldn't be doing anything.
That's true. Well, the name of the band, Andrew Hagar and the Midnight Suns, and their new release is Limited Edition Psycho, and you say that's coming out in, next
Late
month?
End of this month. Yep.
At the end of this month, I suggest you get out there and check them out. I think you'll like what you hear, and if you don't, at least check out Red Light Appetite, the video. It's a great video. But Andrew, I appreciate your time, and I wish you guys nothing but success. And like I said, hopefully you get out on the road, and we get a chance to see you live.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for your time, Larry. I appreciate you so much.
No problem. You have a good day.
Thank you. You too.
Bye. You still there?
Yep. Sorry.
I appreciate you giving me a call back and giving me a second chance of doing this.
Of course. Even though I had such a great time with the first interview, you know? So not a big deal.
That's what I told Sean. I was like, I did the one with Kenny that day, and I felt like those were the two best interviews I've done in a long time. If I sound a little deaf, I had my full teeth extracted, so I'm talking a little funny, but...
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, thank you extra for giving the time.
Well, that's all right. I like I said, I enjoy your music and your thought process and your everything you do. I appreciate somebody in the younger group. You know, like I said, I'm 61. I just turned 62, actually, last week, 2 weeks ago. And
happy birthday. Happy belated birthday.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I enjoy what you're doing, and I really do look forward to hopefully you get out on the road and get a good come check you out.
I would love that.
So, all right. Well, I appreciate it, Andrew. I'll let you go, and you have a good day.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day, Larry. Thank you so
much.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.